The morning of today's Daf Mechoros is Mem Ches. We are Mem Zayin Amud Beis. We're in the middle of a machlokus that started on the top of the Amud on Mem Zayin Amud Beis. We'll start from the top of the Amud. Itmar, the Gemara quotes, Kohen Shemetz V'Yinich Ben Chalal. So the Kohen dies and he leaves himself a Ben Chalal. The Yasam, the orphan in this particular case, is not a Kohen. His father's a Kohen, which normally means that the son's a Kohen. That's how these things generally work. However, the father married a grusha, and by marrying a grusha now, so the what comes out is what's called a halal. Halal and halacha is a kohen, but not a kohen. In fact, the word halal means empty, hollow. In fact, the word halal, you can hear in the word hollow. So he's a kohen that's devoid of kedusha. So the son now is a kohen devoid of kedusha. So now is there a pidyon aben requirement? So ostensibly the answer is yes, because he's not a kohen. On the other hand, the father's a kohen. So, in other words, who's the father going to pay the pidyon aben requirement to? The father will just simply take it, the money out of his right pocket and insert it into his left pocket. So good. So if the father were alive, so the father would just simply be paying himself. So here in a classic scenario, there's not much classic about it, but in this classic scenario where there is a father who's a Kohen, whose son's a halal, a Kohen devoid of Kedushas Kahuna, so the father would just simply take the pidyon aben and pay him to himself. However, Rav Chisda Amar HaBen Chayv Levdos Atzmo, Rabba Barav Huna Amar Ein Chayv Levdos Atzmo. So we're now describing a scenario where the Kohen himself died, and the Amoraim discuss and debate whether or not the child has to pay his own pidyon aben. Now the Gemara goes and clarifies the issue. If the father would have died after the 30-day period where the obligation to pay now kicks in, so then we can assume that the father just simply took the money and the father doesn't even have to do this. Meaning halacha views it as if the father took the money from his right pocket and put it into his left pocket, and so therefore the child would have no obligation. The obligation's been satisfied. Father died within 30 days. Rav Chisda Amar HaBen Chayv Levdos Atzmo. So Rav Chisda is of the opinion that the son is obligated to redeem himself. Da'alo zacha aviv. Lepidyon, because the father never received the pidyon haben money from himself, and so therefore there is an obligation, and therefore the child now has to pay for that obligation. On the other hand, so that's one svara. On the other hand, Rava Barav Huna Amar Ina Ben Chayv Levdos Atzmo. There is no requirement for the son to redeem himself. Why? Da Amar Lei, because here's what the son now is going to be saying to another Kohen. In other words, this dialogue doesn't actually have to occur, but this is the argument that you can make. You know, even though it's true, I do not have Kedushas Kohen, but where do I come from? And my father is somebody who is a Kohen. And if he were alive and you were to go to him, you know you wouldn't be able to extract the money from him because he himself, my father himself, was a Kohen. And he could just simply say, rather than giving you the money, I'll give myself the money. So in other words, so the whole obligation now is deriving from somebody who you can't contend with. And if you cannot contend with the source of the obligation, I'm just simply a derivative of that source, well, you can't come to me. So, Delamasis Lishu Adina Ba'ade Tanan. So the Gemara says, fine. So we have now a machlokus amongst the Amoraim under the circumstance, and the Gemara quotes a Mishnah. Nizgaira Mu'uberes. So let's say a woman converts while pregnant, Bechor LaKohen. The first one that comes out of her is a Bechor LaKohen. Now, it's her firstborn, it's a Petah Rechem, and so and she had it when she was Jewish, meaning the baby was born when she was Jewish, so there's a requirement to pidyon aben. That part's very clear.
But it was conceived when she was Jewish.
So ve'amai le'malei asina behadei. Now why can't you make the exact same argument? Look, if you were to go to the source of the obligation, and you would say to my father, hey, pay me. So my father would say, look, I don't have to pay you. Meaning, I don't have an obligation of pidyon aben. I'm not Jewish. So in other words, if the source of the obligation is not obligated, so me, who's just simply a derivative of that obligation, so I for sure don't have to pay as well. And obviously that argument over here doesn't hold. It doesn't carry over. So the Gemara says, Shani Ovi Kocham, Delay Slechiv. So the Gemara says, okay, but not comparable. Not comparable because the father and the son, biologically related, halachically not related. Right. And so therefore, there is no source of the obligation. The father just simply is not a miyuchas. It's not someone who is related
to the son. So the son therefore does not and cannot say, hey, you can't go to my father. Biologically a father, but halachically not a father. So the two cases are simply not comparable. The Gemara on this issue, Amar Rabbi Shimon Yasina, Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Kohen Shemetz Pesach Shoshim Meinich ben Chalaha ben Chayef Latosas Asmo, Shelo Zacha Ha'av B'Pidjono, Meislacher Shoshim Yom, Eina ben Chayef Latosas Asmo, Shari Zacha Ha'av B'Pidjono. And the Gemara just simply quotes in the name of the Amara a very decisive halacha on this issue, and that is that the father, in this scenario where the father's a Kohen and he marries a Grusha and they have a child, and it's a firstborn, so if the father dies within 30 days, so now obligation is still pending, and therefore at the 30-day mark, the obligation now kicks in, and the son has to pay it. Masha ein kein, if the father died after 30 days, so then the obligation has been satisfied because the father paid himself. And so therefore, there's no longer an obligation, and so the child does not have to pay. Okay, and the Gemara clearly sides with the Rav Chista side of the argument, and not the other side of the argument.
Why is there not the guy about the father, that he shouldn't be in a position to get the money, because he was the one that caused the whole problem?
I mean, there are two, understood, but the two separate issues. The marriages which he did were incorrect, that part's true. But then after that, the second issue is a totally separate issue now. Meaning the monetary obligation, the pidyon haben, now becomes a totally separate issue. And just because he behaved incorrectly in one area is not going to affect and influence the other areas of halacha. No, the two just simply are unrelated.
Scenario where he did not over anything.
He did.
He was not over on Grisha.
No, he married.
He didn't marry her.
Huh?
He didn't marry her.
He didn't marry her.
Why not? Yeah, he had a child.
Why? Of course he did.
Whether he
of course he doesn't have a yirah halal.
Koyan is around that. There's no kedusha is around that. It's just the regular kedusha is on a nuya.
I'm simply not following.
He married.
Of course, that's why the child is a halal, because they got married.
Grisha without marriage.
How do you know it's without marriage?
I'm just giving you a scenario.
Oh, okay, fine. Okay.
He was not over on the last.
That's still not proper behavior.
Still
was
his child.
He was not over on the last. He was over on the same affair.
Okay. I hear you, but I would argue that it doesn't make a difference. What difference does it make whether he married or didn't marry her? There are two separate issues.
Okay.
V'chein. Mishalo shasa achrei ba'ala gimel chadashim v'chulei. B'chul anachalu d'laha v'hakapasha shaka. So Ben made this point yesterday. The Gemara now picks up on exactly this point. Again, the storyline goes as follows. A woman was married to a man, divorced, and now or widowed, and now goes to a second husband, and she does not wait the requisite 3 months. She needed to wait 3 months. She didn't. 2 months later, she marries another man, and 7 months later, she has a child. And now, under this circumstance, so we simply do not know this child. Is he a child of the first husband or that of the second husband? And so there was no paternity test at the time, and so we simply don't know. And this young man now exists in a state of suffix in terms of who his father is. And what we learned together in the Mishnah is that he's not entitled to the Bechor, to the Pishtaim of the Bechor, because each one of the family set can simply say, hey, we don't know you're the son of our father, you may be the son of the other father. And what the Gemara's question now is very simple. In other words, the entire discussion is revolving around the Bechor, the double portion. Why are we talking about the double portion? Let's just even talk about the most basic issue, which is he at all involved in the estate? Right. Imagine each family set will say, all the brothers of the first father will say, simply say to him, you're not our brother. In other words, we don't know for sure you're our brother. There is a good chance that you are somebody else's son, another man's son. So you know what? You know how much of the Yusha you're going to actually get? Zero. And the other family could say the exact same argument. Well, we don't know you're our brother. The could very well be that you're the son of the first father. And so therefore, you know how much of the Yerusha you're going to be receiving? Zero. So why is the Mishnah having what seemingly is an extraordinarily limited discussion of, is he getting Pishnaim? Is he not getting Pishnaim? The discussion should be much more fundamental. He should be getting nothing.
Zero, right.
Okay. That's the Gemara's question. B'chol anachlu d'lohave akapasha shaka v'amai lezo l'gabe hai v'litche v'l'gabe hai v'litche. Each one of the set of the brothers of the first father and the second father could just easily push them off and say, you want to take money away from us? Hamotzi mechavero alav haraya. Am Reb Yirmi alo nitzrucha el alaba acharav. So the Gemara says like this, you're right. That's absolutely correct. The question's so strong, the question becomes the answer. Where the discussion now ensues is the following. Okay, fine. So you have, let's go to the second father. Okay, so you have him, meaning possibly the firstborn, but we don't know. And then we have the next son. Now, the next son is one of two things. For sure, he's the son of the second father. That part's clear. But he also may be the firstborn. Ah, so he also may be the firstborn. But we don't know for sure. Because that 7-9 month old, right, they could be the firstborn, so we simply don't know. V'hachi kamar. Bechor lekohen v'haba acharav in bechor lenachala. So he'll be a bechor lekohen, and the one that comes afterwards is not going to be a bechor lenachala. Meaning, now that second son is not going to be a bechor lenachala. He won't be able to be entitled to pishnayim because of the potential brother, older brother that he has. The possible older brother that he has. So then now what that possible older brother that he has makes him is possibly not the firstborn son. Okay. Now, v'lichtivu ashar lahadade. So the Gemara says like this. So I don't understand. So we have now a scenario where I have a possible firstborn and the next one also may possibly be the firstborn. So we have two members of the family who may possibly be the firstborn. And one of them is entitled to Pishnayim. We don't know which one of them is entitled to Pishnayim. Why don't they do the following? Why don't they just simply write each other power of attorney? And they just simply say, look, I may have a possibility to collect the Pishnayim. I don't know. But you also may have the possibility. Between the two of us, there is definitely a second X of the estate that we are entitled to, either you or me. Look, I'd rather have half of that X rather than none of that X.
Right.
So what we'll just simply do is we'll write each other power of attorney, and you'll be able to collect for, I'm giving you my ability to collect, you're giving me your ability to collect, and between the two of us, we should be able to collect. And this is what's called writing a harsha one for another. Now we're going to see a little bit later on from now that this is a maneuver. It is a perfectly legitimate maneuver. So if that's true, so why not use that maneuver over here? So the Gemara explains, Mesaila Rabbiana, Dam Rabbiana, Hukru Lusof Nit Arvu, Koshvan Asha Zelazah. Lahukru Vasof Nit Arvu and Koshvan Asha Zelazah. So the Gemara says like this. You can only write Harsha under the following circumstance. Only when, at one point in time, you knew definitively who you were, and then later it became a suffix. Right? The example we're going to see later on is that the babies were born in the hospital. At one point in time, we knew exactly who they were. And then a switch, and the babies got switched around after that. Under those circumstances, now without going through all the details of exactly what exactly happened, so if it's hukru ulavasof nitarvu, if originally they were recognized as who they were, and then only afterwards is it mixed up, so then they can write each other power of attorney in order to be able to collect. However, in a scenario where the suffix starts from the very point of origination. From the moment that person's born, there was a suffix, you do not have the ability to write harsha. And consider in our circumstance over here, this child that was born, possibly from the first father or from the second father, the moment that he's born, he is a suffix.
Right.
We simply do not know from the moment he comes into this world whether he is the son of the first father or the son of the second father. So this is not a case of hukru ulevesof nitarvu. This is immediately from origination a suffix, and therefore no harsha could be written. Okay. Ezo b'chor l'nachla ula kohen. Now, what is a b'chor for both nachla and a kohen? Now, the obvious answer to this question is a case where it's her first marriage, his first marriage, their first child. That's obvious. In fact, it's so obvious, the Mishnah doesn't even bother mentioning that because we want chidushim. We want novel ideas. So if, of course, it's their first one, so then yes, the first son that they both have together is going to be b'chor for nachla and a b'chor for kohen. We want a chidush, and we're going to receive it. Eze b'chor l'nachla l'kohen ha'mapel shpir malei mai malei da malei geninim. A woman is having something. Something came out of her, but it wasn't a fetus. It doesn't even present itself at all like a fetus. It was an amniotic sac. It was filled with water. It was filled with blood. It was filled with some other fluids. Hamapelis kimin dogim. if let's say what came out of her was so mutated, looks like a fish, chagav mishkatim v'ramasim, it looks like some other lower form creature, not a chaya, not a behema. Hamapel siyam arba'im, let's say she miscarried within 40 days, up to the 40th day of conception. Haba achrim b'chol anachala ulekoin. So that which she discharged is not a leida at all. In no area of halacha does it qualify as a leida, and so therefore it doesn't count not as peter rechem. Peter rechem demands that it be something within the category of leida. These are just discharges that come out of her. It doesn't qualify as leida, and so therefore it's not peter rechem. The next one that comes out is the first one that comes out vis-a-vis leida. Therefore, the next one that comes out is in fact the bechor for pidgin haben. And it goes without saying that's also going to be a bechor lanachla as well. Bechor lanachla is his firstborn, and his firstborn, as we've discussed time and again now since the beginning of this parak, has to be a viable entity. Obviously, these things that are coming out of her are obviously not viable entities. Okay.
They're not humans.
Right. Correct. Yotzei dofen. The haba acharav shneim einam bechor lo lanachla v'lo lekoin. Okay, and so we get to the big discussion, the big debate over here, and that's the yotzei dofen. The first one that comes out via cesarean. The next one that comes out vaginal. So shneim einam bechor lo lanachla v'lo lekoin. So according to the Tanakama, so there is no bechor whatsoever on either, not in the first, not in the second. Why not? Hold that thought. We're going to explain in just a moment. Rabbi Shimon Omer Arish Lanachla Vashin Lachamish Laim. And Rabbi Shimon actually assigns Bechor for each. Rabbi Shimon says that the first one is Nachla. He's going to get the firstborn portion. And the second one is going to have a pigeon a ben, because the second one is Petarechem. Now, these are two very interesting positions on the same scenario, and they really both are ending up in literally polar opposite positions. Meaning in a scenario where you have firstborn being cesarean, secondborn being a natural delivery. So according to the Tanakama, no bechor on either. According to Rabbi Shimon, a bechor for both. How do they arrive at those conclusions? Gemara explains very quickly. Rishul anachla lo, v'yaldu lo bi'inan. So as far as nachla is concerned, so the Torah says v'yaldu lo. So it has to be a leida. And a leida is defined by a natural delivery. So according to the Tanakhama, being that the first one did not come out in a natural manner, but rather via cesarean, so therefore there is no bechor lenachla. And as far as the second one is concerned, the second one's the second one, not the bechor for nachla. Now what about the second one being peter rechem? L'chamish laim namilo peter rechem meinan. L'chamish laim namilo peter rechem meinan. Now as far as the first one is concerned, obviously there's no pidgin haben. Because pidgin haben demands peter rechem, it has to come out in a natural manner, vaginal delivery. And the first one obviously was not. So the first one is not a bechor lanachla because the Torah says v'yaldu lo. The first one is also not a peter rechem because it's not peter rechem. Period. Simple. What about the second one? So sheni lanachla lo reishi sono bi'inan. So the second one is not going to get the double portion. Why not? Because he's not the firstborn. The Torah says reishi sono. It's the first issue of the father. The first issue of the father already came out, albeit via cesarean, but that's Reishis Ono. Now again, on a technicality, the first one's not going to get the Nakla because V'yaldu lo. But the second one is not Reishis Ono. What about the second one for Pidgin HaBen? L'chamish laim nami lo kesavar b'chol adavar echa lo havi b'chor. So the second one is not going to be is subject to the Pidgin HaBen. Because even though the second one is Peter Rechem, but in terms of which child it is, it's not child number one. It's child number two. Right. So although it is Peter Rechem, but at the same time, however, it's not the first child that she gave birth to. So therefore, not the second one, not Bechol HaNachla, and not Pidgin HaBen. Good. That is all the opinion of the Tanakhama, very clearly explicated. What about Rabbi Shimon? Rabbi Shimon Amar Rishon LaNachla V'Shin LaChamish Laim. Rabbi Shimon Tamid Amar Teile L'Rabbos Yotzei Dofen. So Rabbi Shimon, first and foremost, is of the opinion that a cesarean section does qualify as a leida, and therefore it affects many different halachas. Notably, it affects tumas leida, that the mother, even though she delivered via cesarean, is going to be tameya, right? 40 days, 80 days, depending on whether it's male or female. Also, it's going to affect the halachas of bris milah, Right? Interesting. According to Rabbi Shimon, the bris milah is on the eighth day, right? I'm sure that has gone reported. Good. So that's true if it's a leida. If it's a cesarean, so it's not clear whether the bris is to be on the eighth day or not on the eighth day. In other words, the cesarean's not going to be docha Shabbos. According to Rabbi Shimon, a cesarean does qualify as a leida. And so, therefore, according to Rabbi Shimon, it would be Docha Shabbos. We don't pass like Rabbi Shimon, but that's the Shita's Rabbi Shimon. So, in many areas in Halacha, Rabbi Shimon is of the opinion that regardless of how the baby comes out, whether it comes out natural, whether it comes out cesarean, it does, in fact, qualify as a Leida. So, as far as the first one now receiving the Nachla, so then the first one receiving the Nachla, yeah, because that's considered a Leida. Now, V'hashen l'chamish salayim. Now, the second one, there's going to be a pigeon abandoned by the second one. Now, why? Why should there be a pigeon abandoned by the second one? Isn't there already a firstborn that came out? Mm-hmm. That's true. But the firstborn that came out was not Petar Rechem. It didn't breach the Rechem in the normal way. It's only the second one that breached the Rechem in the normal way. But it wasn't the first one that come out. The Gemara says, okay, on this, Rabbi Shimon holds, and this is the last line of the Gemara, so, V'hasheni l'chamishalayim kasavar b'chor l'davar echar ave b'chor. According to Rabbi Shimon, even though it is a bechor from one dimension, not from both dimensions, meaning it is the petarechem. It is the one that first breached the natural delivery of the mother, the natural canal of the mother. So therefore, it's going to be subject to petarechem. It's not the firstborn. Doesn't matter if it's the first one that went through the canal. So therefore, it is considered petarechem.
What if the mother has an abortion before this? A miscarriage, an abortion.
That's a human.
I mean, the first Mishnah discussed where it comes out mechutach. The first Mishnah said that if it comes out mechutach, that's considered petarechem. Right? That was the first Mishnah of the Perek. We're Mem Chesam and Aleph, today's daf, and we are beginning with a Mishnah. Mishla Bachra Ishto V'Yalda Shnei Zecharim. So a woman who has not previously given birth, and now, Baruch Hashem, she gave birth to twin boys. Nosin Heislaim Lekoin. So five salim are going to be given to the Kohen. And we're discussing a scenario where there was a mix-up. There was a mix-up in the hospital. We don't know which one. Okay? Okay, they look the same. It happens. Okay, sorry for being so flippant. But still, doesn't matter. In other words, one of them is the firstborn. There is an obligation of the father paying the five salim, and so therefore he's still obligated to pay the five salim. So, Nosin Heislaim Lekoin. Mace Echad Mehem Besoch Shal Shem Yom Ha'av Pater. If let's say one of them died Rachmanis within 30 days, the father does not have to pay. Because although we don't know which one was the Bechor and we don't know which one died, was it the Bechor or the non-Bechor? But when all said and done, now it could be that the Bechor died. Could be. And it's before 30 days. So that means to say that there's no obligation. But there's also another possibility that it wasn't the Bechor who died. But again, though, this is now a monetary obligation, and the only time that somebody can come and take money from you is only if he has definitive knowledge and proof that he is actually owed the money. Once and now is in the area of a safek, hamotzi mechaver al averayu. You can't come and take money from me if you don't definitively know that you owe me the money, that I owe you the money. Okay. Now, so far so good. Everything in the Mishnah is straightforward. Here's now where it gets really choppy. Mesa av. So let's say now the father has died. So we have a scenario where twin sons were born. We don't know which one's the Bechor. One of them obviously is. We don't know which one. And now we're talking about a scenario where the father died. Now within 30 days or after 30 days? Hold that thought. So, Mesa'av v'habanim kayamim. Now the sons are alive. Now the sons are going to be inheriting the estate. Rabbi Meir Omer im nasno achelo chilko nasno. V'im lav peturim. So Ramir is of the opinion that as long as the estate has not yet been divided amongst the kids, so then there is an obligation. If, however, the estate's been divided amongst the kids, then there is no obligation. Paying the five salim to the Kohen. Rabbi Yehuda Omer nischayvu nechasim. And Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that the estate is obligated to pay, and so therefore, regardless of whether it's split or it's not split, there's an obligation to pay. Zachar Unakeva. Now we're going to be spending the rest of today discussing that very case. So we're coming back to that in just a moment. Zachar u nekeva. Now, in the case where, let's say, it's not twin boys that were born, but rather a boy and a girl. And again, a mix-up, we don't know which one came out first. Ein kan lekohen klum, obviously the kohen's not going to be receiving anything, because this is a very straightforward question of safek, and amotzi mechavero alav haraya. Okay. So far, so good, and where we're going to be spending all of our time discussing this morning is going to be the case of where the father died. Now, it's important, and the Mishnah did not clarify this very issue, and that is, when did the father die? Did the father die before 30 days or after 30 days? Now, obviously, that makes all the difference, or at least presumably it should make all the difference, because the obligation to give the 5 shalim is only after 30 days. Before 30 days, there's simply the obligation has not yet kicked in. So when did the father die? So, Demisa av Emas. That's exactly the Gemara's question. So, are we talking about where the father died after 30 days? So the Gemara says, I don't understand. If the father died after 30 days, so now there is an obligation. And there's an obligation, and there's something in halacha called a shibud. A shibud means that when I'm obligated somebody money, so then not only am I obligated, but all my property is leaned against that obligation. And so that means to say that in the event that I'm no longer able to pay it, let's say for a simple reason that I'm no longer here, doesn't matter. My estate is still now mortgaged against that obligation, and so then obviously the one who is owed the money can go and collect it from my estate. So over here, if the father died after 30 days, what are we even talking about? Of course there's an obligation to pay because the estate is mortgaged against that obligation. And so now the estate is going to be inherited by the kids, but so what? Of course, the obligation is still going to be standing.
Obviously, the father's not a Kohen.
Right, correct. Ella demis besoch lamid yom. So it must be that the father died within 30 days. So maishna ki chalkul da'azal gabe hayim matchilei, da'azal gabe hayim matchilei. So if the father died within 30 days, so then just imagine. What difference does it make then whether the estate was divided or not divided? And in any regard, there's no chiyuv. And you can, now the kids are going to make it beyond the 30. In this scenario, the kids are going to be older, become older than just 30 days old. Meaning eventually the kids are going to grow up. But it doesn't matter. In other words, there was a mix-up in the hospital. We don't know which one's the b'chor and which one's not the b'chor. And so let's just simply say, look, the kohen goes over to one of the sons and says, hey, you owe me the money. And he'll say, it's true. One of us owes us the money, but it wasn't me. Okay, so.
Concerned about this, let's say they don't give the money, but aren't they concerned about the status of them not being redeemed?
No.
There really is no
status change. In other words, it's strictly a monetary obligation. They don't have kedusha before the pidyon haben. Period.
But they're not redeemed.
Okay. It's not a redemption. I know we say the words redemption, it's not a redemption. They don't have any special status. The Gemara made this point at the beginning of the Masechta very clearly. It's not a redemption. We call it pidyon haben. I know that. And I've also made this point before. If you open up a siddur and you read the nusach, it sounds like a redemption. It sounds like what you're saying, right? The Kohen says to you, either you'll give me your son or you give me the money. And the father says, I'll give you the money. Right, right. You know the joke I made earlier. Can we wait? You know, wait. Like, give me like 20 years. Right, wait 20 years, and then I'll decide. Okay, good. But it's not a redemption. It's a monetary obligation. As we're learning the Gemara right now, that's we're all going to say it together. It's a monetary obligation. So the Gemara says it's a monetary obligation, and it's a suffix. So as the coin now goes to each one of the sons, so the son says, look, we all know there was a mix-up in the hospital. We don't know which one of us is a bechor. So what are you coming to me for? You could just as well go to him. So the Gemara says, "Kilo chalkunami lezo lagabe havelitche velezo lagabe havelitche." And so why can't the same thing happen even before the division occurs? So Amar of Yirmiyahu Zosamer. So the Gemara is going to give a couple of attempts of explaining the halacha in our Mishnah. Now remember, our focus right now is going on Reb Meir. Because Reb Meir says everything is going to be dependent on whether the estate was divided or not divided. And the Gemara is trying to make heads and tails of this halacha of Reb Meir. So here is now going to be our first attempt. And that is the opinion of Reb Yirmiyahu. Reb Yirmiyahu Amar Zosa Mer Shnei Yosef Ben Shimon Shayu Be'ir Achash V'lachu Sadeh B'Shutfas. So let's say you have two Yosef Ben Shimon's in the same town. Now, back in the day, names were very simple. Names were not complicated, and last names, that's a modern invention. Okay, so it could very well be that in the same town you have two people by the same name. And even though you're known by your name and the name of your father, so in the same town, you have two Yosef and Shimons. Now, what happened was is that you lent money to one of the Yosef and Shimons, but now it was not made clear on the document any more information. Right? You know, the short Yosef ben Shimon. Didn't say that on the document. So in other words, so now as you go to Yosef ben Shimon and you say to him, hey, could you pay me back? He'll say to you, why are you going to me? I'm not the one who borrowed the money. It's the other Yosef ben Shimon. So you're a little bit stuck. Okay, it's a weird scenario. But you're a little bit stuck right now. However, let's say the two Yosef ben Shimons are now enter into a partnership together. They decide, hey, you know what? Well, we'll call our corporate entity Yosef ben Shimon, right? Or you're right, Yosef and Yosef. So anyway, so they go into a partnership together, and with that partnership together, they pull the resources together and they buy a property. Oh, that's the best thing that happened to you, because now as they have this partnership, so now you go over to the two of them and you say, look, you have this property that is jointly owned by the two of you. Thank you very much. Right? One of you owe me money, and I don't know which one it is, but this property now I'm going to collect from. Now, admittedly, just give me a moment. Admittedly, Rashi says you can only collect up to half the property. You can't collect the whole property. But still, you have the right now to collect half the property of that.
Would it matter if the partnership was 49-51%?
It's a good question. Let's stick with the facts at hand.
Don't make it.
Right? it's already challenging enough for me. And you want to, you know, you want to raise the bar. I appreciate that, but let's keep it simple. I know I can, but okay. So Zosam Hashem Yosef Ben Shimon Shaiu Beirach Avalachu Sada B'Shutfos Baal Chov Gove Osomihem Da Amar Le Ibi Didcha Masikna Manta Didcha Mantcha Didcha Kashalkina V'I Bechavercha Masikna Manta Dechavercha Kashalkina. Look, I'm going to help myself to this property, and again, up to half of the property. I'm going to help myself to this property because either way, I'm entitled to it. And so the same thing now can be said regarding the Kohen and our two children, our two sons. One of them is a Bechor. So Rav Yirmiyah says the cases are comparable. And that's what allows the Kohen to come and to collect. Amar Rava. So Rava says, no. The cases are not comparable. Michti. Nichzei debar inish inun arvin bay. You know why it is that your property is mortgaged against an obligation? It's because you owe the money. And so when the principal owes the money, so that means that any of his estate is going to now be mortgaged against that loan as well. Property is used as an ariv. It's a guarantor. That's what property is. Wait, when you borrow money in order to buy a house, so the principal obligation is on you, and obviously the house is there to serve as a lien against that loan as well. The property is an ariv. It's a guarantor. So over here, when Yosef ben Shimon borrowed money from you, Yosef ben Shimon owed you the money. So now when he comes onto a property, so now a lien is going to be created on that property as well. But that's because he owes me the money, and therefore the property is leaned, is mortgaged against that. Debar inishin and arvin bay. Mika mida didliday lo masi tavale ula ariv masi tavale. However, over here, think about it. The Kohen's going now over to one of the sons. Now, one of them is not the Bechor. So for one of them, there is simply no obligation whatsoever, period. And so now, if I can't go after the principal, you think I can now go after the guarantor? Guarantor is only serving as a backup to the principal. But if there's no obligation on the principal, so then there's no guarantor that's created. The Gemara says, and we all know this is true, V'atnan, the Mishnah at the end of Bava Basra, the tail end. If I lend money to a person with an arev, with a guarantor, somebody's co-signing on the loan, so then I can't go after the arev, I can't go after the guarantor. Now, you know the Mishnah doesn't mean that. The whole reason why he's co-signing is so that you can go after the guarantor. What does the Mishnah mean? We all know pshat, the Gemara says it. It means he's not first in line. The first person that I go to is the principal. I go to the borrower. And in the event that the borrower defaults, then and only then can I go after the guarantor. But my ability to go after the guarantor is only because there is a principal involved. There is a borrower involved who owes me the money. So then the guarantor can back up the borrower. But over here, the Cohen's going after one of the two boys, but one of them has no obligation whatsoever. You can't call the estate a guarantor for him when he himself may very well not be obligated at all. So the Gemara basically dismisses Rav Yirmiyah's answer. So now we're back to square one. So let's reset the question and now let's give an answer to our question. So question. We have a scenario where the father gave birth to twin boys. They got mixed up in the hospital. We don't know which one's the firstborn. And the father, Rachman, has died. And now it's a question of the Kohen and being able to collect from the pigeon of Ben. Rav Meir says, well, if the estate was not been divided, so then the Kohen can come and collect. Once the estate has been divided, the Kohen cannot collect. And what we're trying to rack our brains to do is figure out, well, what difference does it make? Whether the estate was divided or the estate was not divided. Shouldn't it basically be the same? Meaning, can't each son simply say, it's not me, it's the other? So, Ella Amarev Olam Shemesach Alam Yom. So the Gemara now is going to be giving our answer. Now, this answer is going to get a little bit complicated, so buckle up. The father died after 30 days. Okay, fine. Which means now that there is an obligation. And not only is there an obligation, but the estate now is leaned against that obligation. Okay. The Idik and Nechse Tuva Hachinam Deshako. Now, if dad left a significant estate, and by significant, I only mean anything beyond 5 salayim, so then, obviously, of the estate, 5 salayim are going to go to the Kohen because it's the estate is meshubad, it's mortgaged against that obligation. Okay, fine. And that part's straightforward. So, the estate was made up of only 5 salayim. Dad died with very little. Just 5 salayim. Now, everybody here subscribes to the rule of Rav Asi. What is the rule of Rav Asi? Now, by the way, not everybody subscribes to it, but as we are explaining the Gemara right now, we are assuming that everyone's in agreement with Rav Asi. When brothers divide an estate, how is that division to be viewed as? It's one of two possibilities, or actually Rav Asi has a blend of those two possibilities. One possibility is that when we divide the estate, truth of the matter is that the portion that I received, that was a portion that was always entitled to me. Right? Happens to be that we only decided later, but that was a portion that was entitled to me from the very beginning. And so therefore, when I receive it, I'm not receiving it as a purchaser, I'm receiving it as a yoresh, as an inheritor. Wrong transition. And the same thing is true with you. When you got your portion, you received it as Yerusha, not as a purchaser. Now, this first way that we're saying it over is predicated on the principle of Yesh Breira. Meaning, the principle of Yesh Breira tells us that when we make a decision now, the roots of those decisions go back to the very point of the origination. Right? It's Lima Freya. It's retroactively now. Even though we only allocate and divided it now, but that division goes back to the point of the death of the father. So we're both Yorshim. That's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is, no, ain Breira. No, we don't subscribe to Breira. And so now as dad divided and there's this an estate and you're receiving a portion, I'm receiving a portion, we're really bartering with one another. Right? I want that car, you'll take that car? No, let's flip. And so whatever I get is not viewed as a Yerusha, but rather viewed as a Lakuach. I really bought it. I purchased it. Well, with what currency did I purchase it with? I bartered against whatever you received. Fine. So now, how do we view this division of an estate between two brothers? As a Yerusha or as Lekuchos? Well, it really depends on whether you hold Yesh Breira and Breira. Okay. Rav Asi takes a really interesting position. Blend. Every estate, according to Rav Asi, is part Yerusha, part Lekuchos. Meaning Rav Asi basically straddling the fence of whether we say Yesh Breira and Breira. And so therefore, Rav Asi halachically will come to the following compromise. The Rav Asi compromise of estate division is, it's half.
Is this like Sunchos?
It's kind of, Tosfos discusses your very point. In terms of whether this is subscribing to Sunchos, not subscribing to Sunchos. Second to last, Tosfos on the Amud discusses this in more detail. For our purposes right now, just the facts on the ground. Rav Asi holds it to be a blend. So fine. So now consider. Okay, this is now where it gets a little bit complicated, but if you once you wrap your head around Ravasi, so now consider. The estate that was left to the two brothers was only 5 salayim. Okay. Now this obligation of the 5 salayim going to the Kohen, is this a written obligation or is this an oral obligation? That's a funny question, isn't it? Meaning it is a written obligation. You know where it's written? In the Torah. Okay. Is a written obligation in the Torah, is that considered like a contracted obligation? Good. I'm glad the answer is silence. Because you could debate the issue. And in fact, the Gemara goes on to discuss. Udekule ama milva aksuva b'tara lav kiksuva kishar damya. Even though the Torah writes out this obligation, but it is not considered like a written contract. It's still considered like an oral obligation. And so now, what do we know regarding non-written obligations? Non-written obligations, you can't go after a lakuach. You can't go after a purchaser. There's no shibud on a non-written obligation. And the reason why is very simple. The Chachamim is enacted a protection plan for all buyers. If a buyer purchases a property or gets any kind of asset, and there was an outstanding obligation against the seller, but it wasn't written anywhere, so then what are you going to do? You're going to go to the buyer and you're going to say to the buyer, hey, thank you very much. This was mortgaged against an obligation. How was I supposed to know about it? And so, and even though over here, admittedly, in other words, I understand the children are not buyers, so to say, but this is a blanket protection plan for all buyers who are looking at an undocumented obligation against the seller. And so therefore, now let's put everything together. So here we have now an estate just made up of 5 salayim, each brother obviously receiving half of that. We also have a scenario where we're holding like Ravasi, mm-hmm. where each brother is considered half Yoresh, half Lokeach. We are also subscribing to the principle that the obligation of the 5 salayim is undocumented. It's an undocumented obligation. And so therefore, which part of those 5 salayim go to the Kohen? Only the Yoresh portion, not the Lakuach portion. The Lakuach portion is not obligated to be paid against an undocumented note. Half of this Yerusha is considered Lakuach. Half the Yerusha, therefore, does not go to the Kohen. If I did a great job clarifying all this, how much is the Kohen now entitled to?
2.5. Why isn't the Torah considered a document?
The Torah is considered a document. But vis-a-vis loans, obligations one against another, it's not considered a documented loan. Again, it's a debatable point. But right now, the Gemara is assuming that's how we're holding. So now, the Kulei Amma Islu, the Rapapa, the Amrapapa, Milva, Peh, Govim and Yorshim and Govim and Lakuchos, and then we're gonna everything I just said the Gemara just now formalizes, and that is that if it's an undocumented loan, you can collect from the Yorshim, but you cannot collect from a Lokeach. And so now there's only one thing left on the table, and that is as follows: between the two brothers, now how much are they obligated to give to the Kohen? Only of the 5 that they inherited. Only half of that 5, only 2.5, because 2.5 comes to them via Yerusha. The other 2.5 comes to them via Lekuchos, is viewed as a purchase. And so therefore, that means that the Kohen can come and extract from them, not the full 5 salim, but only 2.5 salim. And here we get to the crux of the entire issue. And that is that if I can't give the Kohen 5 salim, simply because we don't have... can the Kohen take anything less than 5 salayim? Right. And what the Gemara now is presenting this is that this is in fact the machlokus in the Mishnah between Rav Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, this is in fact the machlokus. Lekuchos v'achav chamesh v'chatzi chamesh kamifli. Rav Meir says for chamesh v'chatzi chamesh. Rav Meir says it's 5 or nothing, and because in the case that we constructed, albeit there were so many variables, and it's a little bit complicated, but just distill, boil down, the estate now can only pay 2.5, and it's 5 or nothing. And Rav Yehuda sever chamesh v'afilu chatzi chamesh, and according to Rav Yehuda, no, Five salaim is how much you pay up to. But if you can't afford five salaim, so you pay whatever you can, 2.5. This is the proposed explanation of the machlokas in the Mishnah between Remeir and Rav Yehuda. Now, you already know. If you've been in the daf long enough, you know. In order to get here, we needed to make so many different assumptions. All you do is just change one of the assumptions, and then we have a whole new way of looking at the machlokas. And the Gemara, in its classic way, does exactly that. So, Ihachi Rabbi Yehuda, and by the way, the Gemara is not going to like it based on the text of the Mishnah. Ihachi Rabbi Yehuda Omer Nischaiv Nechasim Nischaiv Gavra Mi Baile. Well, Rabbi Yehuda says that the estate is obligated. No. In the manner that we just explained, this has nothing to do with the estate. This has to do with whether or not the brothers are in fact obligated. Because all the brothers have to pay is just 2.5. And are the brothers obligated in paying that 2.5? So why would the Mishnah say Nischaivu HaNechasim? That the estate is obligated. No, not the estate is obligated. The brothers are obligated. On top of that, we have the Braisa, and the Braisa discusses the following scenario. The Braisa discusses a scenario where the brothers inherited each one of them 10 zuzim. Now, how much is 10 zuzim? 2.5 salaim. So each one of them inherited 10 zuzim, so under those circumstances, they have to pay. But if they each one of them did not inherited anything less than 10 zuzim, they don't have to pay. Now, the Gemara says, can we think about this Braisa for just a moment? My asara zuzuzev, asara zuzuzev. What exactly is meant by that? Ilema bein de Yerusha bein de Lekuchos. Are we talking about a case of either Yerusha or Lekuchos, meaning the total is 10 for each, v'chamesh v'afilu chatzi chamesh. Now, if it's a total of 10 for each, and that means that the total estate was just 5 salim from the very get-go, so then I don't understand. If we're subscribing to the idea that each one of them is now going to be paying not the full 5, because again, every estate is partially Lekuchos and partially Yerusha, and they're only going to be paying half of that. So why in the world is the Braisa talking about each one receiving 10 zuzim? Let's for a moment entertain that each one of them received 8 zuzim. Okay, great. I mean, not great for them. They got a little amount of estate. But great. So in other words, let's pool our money together. We have now each one of them, us has 2 salayim. So I'm saying, if let's say it was 8. So each one of them now has 2 salayim. So we'll pull together, it's 4 salayim. Okay, so you know what? We'll give the kohen half of that. Meaning, if the halacha allows to give you less than 5 salaim to the kohen, so what number? Why are we putting a number in terms of how much each is receiving? Ihachi my ir yasara afila batzim yasara nami could be less than 10. Elapshita asara zuz di Yerushal azeh v'asara zuz di Yerushal azeh. The number 10 means 10 zuzim that each received as the Yerusha component of their estate. Meaning again, we're holding like Ravasi. Every Yerusha is made up half Yerusha, half Lekuchos. Of the Yerusha portion, each one of them receives 10 zuzim. And that means now it has to be a minimum of 10 zuzim because this Braisa is subscribing to the idea that you pay the Kohen nothing less than 5 salaim. Ama chamesh v'lo chatzi chamesh v'rlei. This Braisa is obviously entertaining the idea that it has to be 5 and nothing less than 5. Ela, dekule ama chamesh v'lo chatzi chamesh. So the Gemara says, okay, so we are going to now, we're going to make this no longer a variable. Everyone is of the opinion that to satisfy your obligation of Pidyon HaBen, you must give the Kohen 5 salaim. Now, Hacha b'deravasi v'rav papa kemiflegi. Over here now, in terms of our discussion, what variables can change? The Gemara says it doesn't matter which one. Either one of them can change. Let's say, for example, we change the variable of Ravasi. Meaning Ravasi says, how do you view Yerusha? Half of it is a Yerusha and half of it is a Lekuchos. Because, again, he's on the fence in terms of Yesh Brera and Brera. Let's just simply say we don't hold like Ravasi. Let's just simply say that all of it is viewed as Yerusha. And so, therefore, the Kohen can come and collect all 5 salaim. That's one variable in which we can change. Here's another simple variable we could change. Right? We go back to, is this a documented obligation or an undocumented obligation? So we said, even though it's an obligation in the Torah, but it's not documented. Milva haksuba b'Torah, lav kiksuba b'shar damim. That too, we could change that variable as well. And so that means that this is considered a documented note. If it's a documented obligation, so then even if each one of the sons is inheriting his 2.5, and the 2.5 of each is partially Yerusha, partially Lekuchos, doesn't matter. This is a documented loan. And the estate now is mortgaged against that obligation. And so therefore they're going to have to pay both of, each one of them has to pay each of their shares, meaning both the Lekucha share and the Yerusha share. So many things can change in terms of the variables that we discussed earlier. So the Gemara says that at this point in time, we really have multiple ways of explaining the machlokes between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. Either, just to quickly recap, there are basically three variables open for discussion. One, is it all or nothing? In other words, if we only have 5 salim to pay in total, but for the complications of the scenario, we're not going to pay all 5, we're just going to pay half of that. Is that acceptable? That's one variable. A second variable, is this considered a documented or undocumented obligation? It's a milva ksuva b'Torah. Is that like a shtar? Does the Torah take the place of a shtar? That's another variable up for consideration. And a third variable is, how do we look at Yerusha in general? Do we look at it as, when they inherited, they're inheriting a state? Is that Yerusha? Or are they inheriting it as Lekuchos? They're bartering with each other, and so therefore what they're ending up with is not an estate, not Yerusha, but rather it's considered like Lekuchos. Or do we take that middle approach of Ravasi, where it's a blend of the two? So there are multiple variables to consider in this scenario, so we have multiple ways of explaining it. Now, let's do the next part. I know the time is late. Let's do the next part really quickly, because I'd like to start from the Mishnah tomorrow morning, otherwise I'd have to reset everything here again, which isn't a bad thing. It'd be a good review, but let's do it anyway. Here's what we're going to do. We're basically going to go and do the same exercise we just did, but instead of the starting point being Rav Meir and the Shita of Rav Meir, we're going to start with the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yehuda back in the Mishnah, if you remember in this scenario, again, reset. The scenario is where father had 2 children, 2 boys. There was a mix-up in the hospital. We don't know which one's the Bechor, which one's not the Bechor. The father died. So in the Mishnah, Rav Meir says it depends on whether the estate is divided or not divided. And Rav Yehuda says, Nischaivu nechasim. The estate is obligated, period. That's the Shita of Rav Yehuda. And now we're going to do the same thing. But we're just starting with Rav Yehuda. But we're going to basically end up in the same place that we just ended up with. When did the father die? So the father died after 30 days. So that gives us the impression that according to Rav Meir, when the estate is divided, they're going to be exempt.
Assumption is that he paid it already right after 30 days, right?
He owes it after 30 days. He didn't pay it yet.
But isn't the...
Right? And so therefore, if he died after 30 days without having paid it, so then his property is now mortgaged against that obligation. But then, so then he must have died within 30 days. Rav Yehuda. So when the estate is divided, so why would Rav Yehuda say that each one of the sons is going to be chayiv? Neither of the sons should be chayiv. Each one could simply say to the Kohen, look, I'm sorry about your predicament. You can't come to me. We don't know I'm the Bechor. The other one may be the Bechor. You're going to get money out of me on a suffix? Sorry. So I'm Rav Yirmiyah Zoso Meris. So here we go with Rav Yirmiyah's attempted answer that we already saw, but now we're going to try it again. We're going to try it within the sheet of Rav Yehuda. Shnei Yosef ben Shimon shayu b'yirechav lakach echad mehem sada mechavero sada mechavero bal chov gova mimenu damerle ibiditcha mesikna manasa ditcha kashakina v'i bechavercha mesikna mishtab delei mikame ditcha. So where I have 2 Yosef ben Shimons and one of them purchased the field, one of the Yosef, meaning, sorry, let me just, I know I'm trying to be quick, but, right, in other words, I lent to one of them. Each one of them now says to me, it's the other Yosef ben Shimon. They're making me crazy. So, and then, unlike we learned in the Amud Aleph where they had a joint property, here, one purchases a property from the other. One of the Yosef ben Shimons purchased a property from the other. Oh, that gives me an opening. Now I go over to the one and I say to him, look, either you owe me the money or the property you own is mortgaged against that obligation. One or the other, I'm going to be able to collect my money. So Amar Rava Michti, Nachsua Debar Inish Inan Arvin Bay. So and along comes Rav and says, well, again, I can only go after somebody and after the guarantor only because the person himself actually owes me the money. So when the principal owes me the money, so then I can go after the guarantor. And then we're just basically, the Gemara says, and now turn back to the Amud Aleph of today's daf, and basically now take it from there, because it's going to be the exact same discussion. But over here, when I have the two sons, one of them really doesn't owe the Kohen the money. So if he doesn't really owe the money, you can't go after the guarantor. So then we're going to leave Rav Yirmiyah's answer. We're then going to move over to Rav's answer and basically rinse, repeat. Meaning go back to all the variables that we just went over in terms of Rav, and that's how we can explain Rav Yehuda. Okay, Adkan, that takes us to the end of the sugya, and tomorrow we start with the Mishnah.